Well, hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Virtue Signal. I'm Bill Whittle here with my friend and fellow warrior, Alfonso Rachel. And this is the show where we try to talk a little bit about some of the philosophy and morality underneath politics. So for this one, I thought we'd do something maybe a little more lighthearted, but still kind of serious. I'm glad you're sitting down for this. The word conservative means to conserve something. There's something that you're trying to preserve, something that you see disappearing or is under threat and you want to hang on to. So I thought it'd be kind of fun to talk about what do you miss? In other words, let's bring back blank and why. Would you like to see? What would you like to see come back to society that you think has really been hurting society by its absence?
Right off the top of my head, I would like to get society to dig Jesus for who he says he is, right? Not according to who we think he is or who we want him to be or try to make him fit into our ideology or anything like that, which is idolatry and creating a God in your own image. And he really hates that. To get back to just, you know, because a lot of times I hear people like talk about, we need to take our country back. We need to get back to this. We need to get back to that. It's like, we don't necessarily want to walk backwards, you know, especially if we're going to try to pursue this perfect union, and not by our own goodness or anything like that, or by our own ideas, can we make a more perfect union? That rests on the shoulders of the Lord himself. And to do that, we actually need to know who he is according to who he says he is.
That's really, first of all, I thought that's where you're going to go with it, but that's really a really important answer. If you walk America's history back, you find that for both black and white America, to the degree that their paths are converging now, but to the degree when they were much more separate than they are today, you would find that people who were religious were generally, the communities were a lot happier and a lot more solid. This kind of government is dependent on virtuous people, which is why we call the show the Virtue Signal. If you're going to let people be free, you've got to have people who are more often than not going to do the right thing, and they're going to do it because of an internal reason. They're not going to do it because they're coerced or they're forced or they're under surveillance. This kind of a freedom-based society is predicated on most of the people being good people. And there's an aspect to Christianity especially that I think is built into the structure of America, and that is the idea of this internal judge who you cannot escape from. This idea that yes, you can get away with this, you know, you can steal this candy bar or whatever the case may be, and no one's going to catch you and you're not going to pay. But somebody's still watching, and eventually you're going to have to answer for it. And it's not just the kind of the fear-based aspect of that so much as just the understanding that that we have an inner conscience that lives within us and can be relied upon to tell us the right thing to do. And I never hear anybody talking about your conscience anymore. When's the last time you ever heard anyone speaking to a child about what does your conscience tell you?
Yeah, interesting enough, because we're brought up for so long, talk about we need to believe in ourselves, you know, listen to your gut, you know, or we hear things like that, you know, but we don't usually hear listening to your conscience. But even still that, your consciousness or your conscience still needs to have a foundation before you can even really listen to it. And in this republic, We have a wonderful opportunity to make the best and the most of what we're blessed with, because we are a republic that recognizes that our rights, you know, are God-given. That's a very unique thing. And that's the foundation of, you know, of our efforts, our achievements and stuff like that. Even our buddy Andrew Breitbart, you know, he himself wasn't a Christian, but, you know, he told me, it's like, look, man, I'll tell you what, I would rather live, you know, under a Judeo-Christian constitution than any place else. It is the best place to be, the safest place to be, the best place to believe, what you're going to believe and thrive. So, you know, is it to say that, you know, a person has to have, that's the beauty of it. You know, as far as the Lord is concerned, it's like, look, man, you don't have to do this. I do not want you making a theocracy of this. People come to me by choice.
Right,
however, there is a reckoning. right? It's like, you know, because people like take God as like, oh, this mean old God, you know, he's going to send you to hell if you don't believe in him. It's like, no, no, it doesn't work that way. I don't send you to hell. You send yourself. I'm a just God. I'm a merciful God. If you do not want to obey me, and if you do not want to live with me, I mean, you don't even like me in the pro tem, right? Even in your temporary life, you don't want to have anything to do with me. Why would I make you live with me for eternity? I'm not going to do that to you, right? So, you know, and when we talk about conservatism, you know, people can apply conservatism to whatever it is that they want. I mean, when people talk, like, people think conservative, they think like the right-wing Nazi regime, and they think of conservatism as some religious faction, even like as far as Islam goes and stuff like that. Well, sure, people can apply conservatism to these things when you are strict with your doctrine. Right? Mm-hmm. You adhere to your doctrine to the point of like even these extremes. Sure, people can call that conservatism, but it's not true conservatism because at the end of the day, it's still going to collapse. In order for conservatism to be truly applied, it has to rest on something that does not decay. The word of God does not decay. So with these other people, you know, who are saying that these things are conservatives, it's like, well, no, it's really a misappropriation of terms. So in America, where this conservatism is built, in American conservatism, it is built on a foundation that our founding fathers even said to them, said themselves, we are appealing to the supreme judge of the world because he is the only one who can lay that eternal foundation for us to go ahead and preserve the society with.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's one of the things I really like discussing and exploring on this show is how much of this stuff is baked into the society. You certainly do not have to be a Christian to be a good person and to be kind and loving. There's no question about that, I think. But the values, that sense of internal judge and that sense of internal conscience is fundamental to the entire structure of this kind of government. You can't do it any other way. Islam has a very long list of things that are absolutely forbidden from external forces, really from external, practically kind of man-made forces, you know, like mundane forces. You're not allowed to do this. You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to do this. Not allowed to do that. Judaism has a set of rules and not nearly as severe as Islam can be. But neither one of those really capture the idea that, yeah, you can do whatever you want to, but you know what's right and what's wrong. You know it. And if you're going to make a choice to do something wrong, then that's your choice. The you're talking about the Constitution and natural law, the God-given rights as natural law. The thing that so many people, even on the conservative side, don't often really understand completely is that the Constitution doesn't grant us any rights. It really doesn't. We say this right is granted to us by the Constitution. No, no. It's very clear, very clear. The Constitution is written in such a way as to say that those rights are with you at birth. You enter the world with these rights, and here are ways the government cannot take them away from you. The right to free speech shall not be restricted. The right to bear arms shall not be infringed. It's a series of constraints on the government. The government and the Constitution don't give us anything other than legal protection from the government. So that's one thing. Now, for me, and we can do a couple of these back and forth real quick. I'll tell you what I think it's time to bring back. I think it's time to bring back play.
Okay.
That when I look around, that to me is the thing that I see really missing, and that I think is a fundamental, like, spiritual and philosophical nutrient. On a strictly intellectual basis, play is essentially it's a simulation for later life. You get to fail at a baseball game, and that's not as harmful as maybe losing your business, but you get used to the idea that you can feel miserable and low, and it'll pass, and, you know, then things will get better. But when I say play, it seems like an odd thing to say that I wish we would have more play in our society when we live in a society of gamers. I mean, that's an occupation now. Oh, I'm into gaming. I'm into gaming. Yeah, gaming. And I've played plenty of video games, but that's not what I'm talking about. The kind of thing I'm talking about is, well, when I think about it, it's outdoors. It's in person. It's a relatively small group of people. And it's the social experience of walking through life together that we don't seem to be have that we don't seem to have much of anymore. And of all the things in modern society that I think are just terribly, terribly destructive, is that play has been destroyed to the degree that when two parents decide that their kids should play, it's not like these two kids met each other in school and said, hey, you seem pretty cool, you want to hang out? Yeah. No, it's like, you know, we've talked about this before. So Erasmus has his painting lessons on Thursdays at 4, so that's not going to work. What about Jedediah? Is he going to be free on Tuesday? Oh, Tuesday's not a good day. You've got your parents setting up an hour, you know, a little box for you to go play in. And I just remember from my childhood, this is related to play. I think one of the things we really need to bring back is this idea that you can, that your kids have to come home when it's dark, and you don't have to know where they are every second of the day. It's important to adults because they're overly infantilized today, but it's especially important to kids that they know that, yeah, okay, I'm going to go here and I can do this and nobody's watching me and I got to be careful when I cross the street and I got to be home, you know, at dark or shortly thereafter.
I hear you, man. I remember those days, man, when those streetlights came on, it was time to boogie home.
Time to boogie home.
Right. So, you know, and just like you said, man, there's like this infantilization of the parents, man. And it's those problems because, you know, as the generations have come up, you know, people are having kids at younger and younger ages, like, you know, and they're worried and they're talking about how the schools are overpopulated and stuff like that. That's because like the parents are practically seeing their own kids in passing period, you know, so.
Yeah. And calling the teachers when they get a bad grade, like, what's the matter with you? Don't you realize that this is a indigo aura genius and how dare you give him a B+?
Right. You know, it's so, you know, entitled, you know, to a good grade and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, but, you know, because everybody's supposed to get a trophy and whatnot, so you should be able to get some trophy-like grades. But, you know, these things that we're dealing with, even with the play, you know, kids are inherently rotten. You know, it's like we have to be taught to be good. You know, it's like
That's right. They're miserable liars.
Right. It's like, you know, you're going to be on the school
chocolate
yard.
Chocolate all over your face. Did you get into the cookie? No, I didn't bake any cookies.
Right.
A man came through the window. They'll tell you that with a straight face.
Yep. Blame all day. And, you know, and the funny thing is, man, is, you know, with Adam and Eve, they were made fully grown. Right. They weren't kids. They had no excuse. They were made in the image of God. They had no excuse to get this wrong. It's like, you guys are grown. OK. And when Adam transgressed, man, he blamed Eve for his transgression, blamed God for his transgression, blamed everybody but the devil. Right. Mm-hmm. He never blamed the devil once. So, you know, but he's a grown man. He had no excuse to do what it is that we did.
He's a grown ass man. Is what you mean to say. You are a grown ass man. And you knew. I told you and you heard me.
And it was hanging out.
Grown ass man.
Yeah. And it was hanging out because they was naked. Right. So it's like there's no excuse.
No.
And now you mentioned something like even, you know, when it came to you know, blacks and whites, you know, in this country and believing in God and whatnot. On a side note, Bill, this is one of the things that kind of scares me. And this is, like I said, this is one of the dynamics that played out there, is that you had Adam angry at Eve, angry at God, and did not blame the one who manipulated them in the first place, right? And Bill, we're seeing that today. And it's really sad because right
now— Everybody's fault but mine.
Right. Well, not just everybody's fault but mine. But the thing is, I'm seeing this a lot. And the Democrats are doing this masterfully. This is just who they are, man. They are of their father, the devil, and the sins of the father, they will do. And what they're doing is that they're making accusations and they're manipulating people. Because right now, we're seeing this racial tension build and build and build. And you're getting it in, I can even see it in some conservative circles, in some Republican voting circles, they're actually starting to grow animosity toward blacks. I'm seeing it, right? Mm-hmm. And with the blacks, they're growing animosity towards Republicans who are getting fed up with this. And more, they're starting to see Republicans as racist, as if they didn't see them as racist enough. However, neither one is really upset with the string pullers,
the
Democrats,
right?
The ones behind the curtain. All right. So this dynamic goes way back. It goes all the way back to the garden. And it's really sad because that's why I keep saying, Bill, you gotta dig Jesus for who he says he is. Because he points all this stuff out. Like I said, the Bible reads us. We don't read it. So these things are playing out. So when you ask me, what would I like to see come back? I would like to see people know the Lord for who he says, so we know what to base these things on, whether it's playtime, because, you know, the kids still got to be taught the rules. You know, mm-hmm.
And that's
how,
right.
How are you going to talk to be a good kid? Well, you got to have something to base
absolutely.
Teaching
absolutely.
A good kid on. So that's where I'm going with that, you know, because, man, I would love it, man, if we could just, couldn't we all just get along? I would
couldn't
love
we?
That. But according to what?
Well, I want to add one thing to the to the thing about play, because when you were talking, I wasn't really listening. I was just thinking about what I was going to say next. No, but seriously, when you were talking about it, I realized when I say I think I'd really like to time to bring back play, this is going to make sense to people who it makes sense to, and other people are going to think it sounds insane. But I would like to bring back kids getting hurt more, physically hurt, not emotionally hurt, physically hurt. I think it's important. I think it's real important that you go out and skin your knee when you fall off a bicycle. I'm not talking about, hey, I want to see spinal injuries or you know, quadriplegics or any of the other things that you can run with to get away from the point I'm trying to make. Mm. But the point I'm trying to make is one of the things about climbing a tree is that you can fall out of the tree. Mm. Now, I knew a lot of kids when I was growing up, and I never knew any kids that were killed falling out of a tree, but I knew a couple kids that broke their arms and legs in the course of playing. I did know two kids who were actually killed when I was growing up in Bermuda. They made a little cave out of this sandstone, and it's just collapsed on them.
Oh, wow.
But those were the only two kids that I was ever aware of that died when I was during my entire childhood. And there's something really important about the ability to get hurt. It's not fun. And that's probably what I think is important about it. As a small aside, having grown up in Bermuda, I remember when I came to visit, we'd come visit the States every year. And I came to stay with my favorite cousins and my Aunt Marty and Uncle Rock in Pennsylvania. And I learned how to ride a bike at my Aunt Marty's house when I was visiting America for 2 weeks. And I literally came off the bike and skinned my knee. And she sprayed it with this stuff called Bactine. And I'm used to stuff like stinging like hell. You know, here's some iodine. She sprayed it with Bactine. I went, this is fantastic. They put some kind of little anesthetic in there. But seriously, if you don't let kids get hurt, they'll never learn how to protect themselves from getting killed. And that lesson is essential. Play, as I said, is a simulator for life. It's an intellectual simulator, it's a physical simulator, and it's an emotional simulator. And a lot of times the things that you learn when you get hurt, well, first of all, you don't generally do those things again. But secondly, the experience has to come from somewhere. In flying, in aviation, we say you start out with a giant bag of luck and you end up with a giant bag of experience. And the trick is to not run out of luck on the way to filling the experience bag up.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a real deficiency in kids that are not allowed to play and allowed to go out and get hurt.
You know, I don't know if it's even so much about, I'm gonna step on some toes, man. I don't even know if it's about, you know, really the kids getting hurt or not. I think a lot of it is the image of the parents, right? If your kid gets hurt, you let your kid get hurt.
You're going to jail now if you let your kid fall out of a tree.
Right, and that's to be expected. It's like these parenting skills. It's like, what kind of a parent lets their kids? And no parent wants to be seen as dropping the ball. Doesn't matter. No parent wants to be thought of as negligent or anything like that. No matter how irresponsible a parent may be, you know, because a lot of their personal image is wrapped up in their kids. So unfortunately, now if a kid does get hurt, then there's going to be steps that are going to be made. And we have like a very litigious, you know, a society as it is.
Yeah.
And
that's why there's no playgrounds anymore.
Right. Somebody's going to have to be made to pay. But the thing is, you know, so no parent wants to be seen as irresponsible. And we're going to make all these strides to make sure that kids don't get hurt. And a lot of times, and we're seeing it, you know, even with the whole COVID thing, a lot of times people's response to safety starts to become more of a liability than the thing that we're supposed to be safe from.
Right.
Kids don't, they're not kind of brought up with a sense of grit. You know, they're these things that they, you know, could actually walk away from. And it does toughen them up. There should be a degree of safety in certain things, but I just think it's the irony, you know, of that that we talk about, we're trying to make the world a better place and make it safe for future generations and all that sort of stuff while doing the very things that are making people not as strong to handle a future generation as it is, you know, so just it's really playing against itself.
Yeah, and we talked about COVID, and we've been talking about the emotional fragility of kids. I mean, when I was a boy, my parents sent me out. I'd go play in the mud, you know. I'd go play in the mud. Parents would go away for, you know, a couple, 2-3 weeks, leave me out there in the mud, and then they'd come back and feed me. And but what medical science shows is that the kids who play in the mud are incredibly healthy. They're virtually immune to disease because their immune system is activated by the fact that they're in constant contact with actual germs. And kids that are raised in these skyscrapers who never go outside and whose parents use this antibacterial wipes on everything, the number of cases of allergies just skyrocketing because their bodies never get to experience real germs, and their immune system turns on itself. That's what an allergy reaction is when your immune system attacks your own tissue. So you not only end up with kids who are more emotionally resilient and independent, you end up with kids who are far healthier. And I think that's beyond any real doubt.
Sure. And I think in this, in these generations, in the past few years, I think there's been a lot of lifestyle differences, the way we do work, the way we learn and stuff like that. I mean, I think there's a lot more of a sedentary aspect to it, you know, that people are dealing with. The activity that we do is just maybe not the same as we had, you know, 20 years ago or something like that.
Yeah.
The way that food is processed, you know, it's, you know, with everything that's going on with the Frankenfood that we have and stuff like that, people aren't getting the same kind of nutrients and whatnot. We got diabetes, we got hypertension, we got all these things that are contributing to just a worsened state of health. I think, people, they may concentrate on their bodies, but it's really still, it comes down to for why? Because they're trying to find some sort of emotional fulfillment in it. They're trying to find some sort of mental fulfillment, this personal image that they have. It's for what reason, you know, do we even want to do these things? Or for what reasons do people don't care to do these things? There's extremes on both sides. So, you know, but once again, when we get back to conservatism, that's where that word comes in. It's like, what are you trying to conserve with your own, even just in your own world, in your own state? What are you trying to preserve even with yourself, and based on what, and how do you want to apply it? You know, are you doing it just because, you know, you want to feel good about yourself, some sort of self-esteem kick, or do you actually want to be a blessing to other people? Do you want to, apply your services or a product or just fellowship with somebody else, you know, to have a more vibrant society, you know? But a lot of people, it's about their own self-image and, you know, what can I get out of the world rather than what they can give?
Yeah. So I would like, I think it's time to bring back playgrounds with the spinning things that you can get hurt on, and the monkey bars that you can fall out of, and the swings that you can try and set a world record attempt to go all the way around and suffer the consequences of that. But just so you know that I'm not completely insane, and I'm very serious about this, there is one aspect of modern society that I really think is sensible and smart, and that's bike helmets. I think bicycle helmets are just a really good idea. And of all of the well, can't do this, that's the only one I ever look at and said, yeah, that's a good idea. Now just leave it at bike helmets and let these kids go off and be kids.
I tell you what, really quick, Bill, is like, I think I'd have to concur with that, man, because when I had my bike, man, if I could jump it, I would try to jump it. It was back in the day, man. We would line up our friends and stuff like that and see if we could jump them and stuff like that. And I remember I took a tabletop, man, and I came down and practically got a rock like lodged into my head. And I didn't want to go to the doctor. And I went in and fell asleep. And that wasn't a good move, man. You know, so it might have been a good idea to have on a helmet, but, you know.
I just have to tell this story that we're way over time already, but just real quick. I was probably 8 or 9 years old, and there was a driveway that came down a real steep hill, mm-hmm. and then the driveway would turn into like a little circle. But if you didn't turn, there was like just a little hill and then a huge open field beyond that. And there was nobody living in that house at the time, so everybody would go to the top of the hill, and they'd get on their choppers, you know, their Stingray bikes, and pedal down there and try to jump. And I was sitting there watching a friend of mine come roaring down this hill, and he gets to the point where he's supposed to jump, and he pulls back on the handlebars to get as much air as possible when you're, you know, 8. And he pulls back on the handlebars, and as he does that, I watch the front wheel of the bike just go whew, just came right off the forks. And I remember things were happening so slowly, and, you know, I remember thinking, when those forks that the wheel used to be around, when those things come in contact with the grass, that's not going to be good at all. And fortunately, it was nice, wet, kind of damp soil. But the kid's bike went in, and then he went over. And I recall there being kind of like a face-shaped depression in the in the grass, you know. You can look at the – oh, that was stevia for sure. That'll do it for this edition of the Virtue Signal. It's made possible by the members here at BillWhittle.com. We're very grateful to all of you for your continuing support, and very grateful especially that we got a chance to bring our friend Alfonso Rachel back. So until next time, for Alfonso Rachel, I'm Bill Whittle, and this is the Virtue Signal.